international. They've all got God's message at heart, and everybody is trying to do what they can for the community, which is really great. And there's more ways to do things than the one that you might have been brought up in. So I'm very pleased to be here and to be part of what you're doing. Just to recap on things that were said in the panel, the words that I wrote down, dealing with the ethnically diverse, that's something that we do a lot of at the City Mission. It's about what we do and not what we believe, and I fully embrace that. It's about developing a family atmosphere. That is exactly what we're trying to do at the Mission at the moment. It's a marathon, not a sprint. I'll have to say that on a daily basis, you don't really think you've achieved anything, but you're hoping that over a period of time, you will make a difference. And so you can't be focused on today. You have to look at the future. Going to where people are, and that's some of what we're trying to do. We've got community hubs out in the community, and so we are trying to go out to people's environment. Coming to the Mission, as I found on the first day I started there, is quite overwhelming to come into reception and to see the people who are there. I had to think, this is their home, this is their family, this is where they belong, this is where they feel comfortable. I need to put all that aside, and now it's no problem. I come in and I can chat to them. Some of them have dogs, some of them have children. You've got a something that you can talk to them about. I'm no longer intimidated by it, but on the first day it was something that I hadn't actually, an experience that I hadn't had before, so it was completely new for me. Having time to spare and time to give, somebody said, and I think a lot of our volunteers have time to spare and time to give. And that was one of the reasons why I took the role on. I had retired. I had time to spare. I got tapped on the shoulder and I thought, why not? I was always going to do something in that voluntary philanthropic space. And when you get a tap on the shoulder, you think, this is what I'm supposed to do. So that's what I'm doing. And then somebody was talking about utilising people who've been through the system and what we might call our clients and using them to welcome others, and we do that quite a lot too. And that's one of the things we try to do, is to develop these people who have had very few life skills, who've not achieved anything in life, to utilise them in our organisation and give them a sense of worth and a sense of belonging and to bring them forward in their life. So just picking up on some of those words that people said in the panel, all of those are relevant to the sort of work that we're doing at the Mission. So I'm going to start with a bit of a reflection about a Bible verse, just to sort of set the scene, in Matthew 25, verses 31 to 40, about there being two types of people. First are the sheep, and they're God's people who give proof of the practical love, and they show that love to others, often at their own expense in discomfort sometimes. But they do this because they are unselfish, that they may not be aware of all the good that they're doing and the appreciation that others have of their kindness, but Jesus notices because he has identified himself with the needy. He sees the kindness done to the needy and the vulnerable as being done to himself. And by contrast, the goats are those who think only of themselves. Their lack of interest in suffering of others show their lack of love for Jesus. And they know nothing of his character. And they've never learnt to deny themselves for his sake. And there is no place for them in God's kingdom. So there are certain things that these verses teach us about the way we must give. It can be in the simple things of life. The things that Jesus talked about. Giving the hungry man a meal. Giving a drink to a thirsty person, welcoming a stranger, cheering up the sick, visiting a prisoner. These are all things that anyone can do. It's not a question of giving away thousands of dollars or being recognised for the good work that you do. It's a case of giving simple help to everyday people, the people that we meet every day. And this help can be done without the thought of being rewarded. And those described in the Bible who did help did not think that they were helping Christ. They helped because it was a natural and instinctive, uncalculating reaction from a loving heart. On the other hand, those who failed to help did not, because they thought that these people were the lowest people in the community and were not worth helping. However, if they'd known it was God they were helping, they would have gladly helped. And such help is not generous. It's only done to boost their own self-esteem and displays selfishness. So those people who work at the mission, I feel, are like the sheep. None of them do the work for their own selfish purposes. They do it because they genuinely want to help the most vulnerable people in our city, and in doing so will know the joy in helping Christ himself. The employees are serving, using the gifts that they have been given with the strength that God supplies. Helping vulnerable people in the community does require us to move outside our comfortable circle of friends. It's actually limiting to only associate with people who can give us something in return. It's very easy to restrict our friends to a few comfortable, easy to relate to people instead of reaching out to others outside of our circle of friends. And Jesus teaches us that self-centered living is limiting, and we should engage in other-centered living. There's something rewarding to give when there is no expectation of return. And as Jesus said in Acts 20, verse 35, it is more blessed to give than to receive. And this kind of living and working will cost us nothing, yet the reward and the repayment will be great. So in Jesus' life, he developed a strong relationship with his disciples through teaching, mentoring, healing the sick, and tending to the physical and emotional needs of hurting people. And he showed us the model that we should follow. He showed sympathy, empathy. He ministered to their needs, won their confidence, and improved their lives. He gave them hope. He helped people navigate through the maze of life. He met them where they were. He did not seek reward or try to change them. He supported them where they were and who they were. And the role of support agencies today is to continue that model of caring for the vulnerable people in society. And this has been happening in Christchurch for close to 100 years. City Mission is 95 years old. And the need today is as great as it was in those earlier years. And sadly, there are still an increasing number of people who need our help. In our work at the Mission, we're guided by the words of Matthew 25. Even as you did it to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it for me. So my role at the Mission came about like all roles that I've had in my career. Every single role I've had has come from a tap on the shoulder. It was not a role that I would ever have applied for or even thought I might be able to do, but someone saw that my skills could be put to good cause, and I'm working to prove that the faith they had in me by asking me was not unfounded. I'm really enjoying the role. The staff have welcomed me to the team. It's a tough role, but it is rewarding. And since joining the Mission, which is probably 15 months ago, it was for 6 weeks, I'm personally impressed by the welcome given by the staff to the clients, the passion that they show for the work that they're doing, for the quality of their training, for their experience, and their enthusiasm for helping those seeking our support and love. It was very easy for me to say yes when I was asked if I would continue in that interim role, because I saw the passion that the staff had for the work they're doing, and I wanted to lead them. I want to help them achieve their goals, and I'm utilising the skills that I learnt over 50 years in my previous roles. I'd retired in January last year, as Catherine had said, and I took this role on for 6 weeks. Just 6 to 7 weeks after retiring, so I hadn't got used to being retired, which was probably just as well. But I feel like it was a calling from God to give back to the city and those in need. And as a city, we are blessed to have the City Mission looking after those people who need our care and support. City Missions developed in the 1800s to provide support for the poor in Glasgow, and they focused on spiritual and material needs of the disadvantaged people. Their intention was founded on scripture. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, Let the oppressed go free and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favour. In the early days of this Christchurch City Mission, as the city missions that were developed in Glasgow, there was an evangelical focus as well as a focus on support. But the focus on evangelism was dropped to ensure that the services were unbiased and inclusive for everybody in need. And this change reflects Jesus' practice, which was to unconditionally work with and cure people who were not necessarily part of the mainstream Jewish population. And for instance, as we had in our reading at church this morning, in my church, at the time when the daughter of the Canaanite woman was healed in Matthew chapter 15. So the focus today, as in Jesus' time, is on human rights and dignity, equality, compassion, service, without regard to religious affiliation or spiritual preference. You'll notice that we don't have the word Anglican in our name, as we want to emphasise our support for all. And while we're still under the auspices of the Anglican Church, under Anglican care, we're not financially supported by the church. We are an independent organisation with the need to fund all our own activities. The bishop is the warden of Anglican care. That's the only input that the diocese have in our organisation. So we seek to promote social change, assist in personal, family and community problem solving, and our focus is on empowering our clients, those who are seeking our support, to enhance their own well-being, to give them hope. Hope that they may not have had in their lives until they arrived at the mission. And while not all employees at the mission are Anglican or even have a faith background, they do follow Jesus' mission of service to help those who are hungry, thirsty and impoverished, to help the wounded and plan for their full recovery. And as I said, there is a focus on social justice with a deep commitment to alleviate the needs of the poor and vulnerable and to provide an environment where these people can find their full potential. We respect the dignity, worth and well-being of every person and we aim to give them hope. And the Gospels of Matthew and Mark stress we must treat everyone with love, the second great commandment, love your neighbour as yourself. And that is a very big challenge and an opportunity when dealing with these clients. We must accept one another as Christ has accepted us. And it's all very well to look around this room and say, love your neighbour as yourself. If you come and sit in at the reception at the City Mission, that is a much bigger challenge than loving people who are of a similar ethnicity or spiritual upbringing or even status or position in life. These people are the most vulnerable people in our city. But in serving these clients, we remember that in the eyes of God, all human beings, regardless of gender, social or citizenship status, were created in the image of God and were created equal. In Proverbs 31, we're given an obligation to advocate for those who cannot speak for themselves and for the rights of the destitute. Jesus taught us to care for the vulnerable, the oppressed and displaced people. And we at the mission work to provide a positive relationship as we work with them and protect their human dignity. Jesus actually was the ultimate social worker. He found housing for people, he gave them food, he healed the sick, he reintroduced outcasts back into society. And that's exactly what we're trying to do at the mission today, to help our clients navigate their way through life. From the beginning, the mission over 90 years ago has supported people suffering from the economic effects of the time. The effects of World War II, the Great Depression of the 1930s, the ups and downs over time, the devastation in the lives of the people of Christchurch during the earthquakes, the recent pandemic. These tough times put the resources of the mission under pressure in terms of staffing, volunteers and money. And you could think that not a lot has changed from those early days when the mission gave out food parcels and emergency accommodation. And on the one hand, that is correct. We still have an emphasis on that support, but we're actually involved in a much wider offering of support today than we were 95 years ago. Today, one of the biggest parts of our organisation is our alcohol and other drug services, which we provide for both youth and adults from age 14 to over 90. where we offer the only private detox unit in the South Island, where people come for up to 2 weeks and we attempt to remove their dependency on other drugs. We provide counselling. We have mental health services. We have a mental health nurse. We have GPs who come in once a week and do medical treatments for our clients. And we run transitional housing for those recovering from addiction. We have Elm Tree Lodge in Bishop Street, where around six people can live together in community for 6 months to make sure that they can be supervised before they move back into the community. We have community development activities, which is going to people where they are rather than expecting them to come to us. We do these in association with local churches and community trusts. We have community hubs in Lynwood, Addington, Hornby and Sydenham. These people come for sessions run for perhaps mothers groups, family groups, craft activities, Pilates, yoga, men's shed, gardening activities, or just a chat and drop-in session. People in their own communities, getting to know people in their own community, people they might see when they go to the supermarket, so that it's not as confrontational as coming to the mission. However, it could be an entree to coming to the mission because they'll meet somebody, the staff or the volunteers there will realise that these people have a greater need than just dropping in, and they will encourage them to go to the mission. They'll give them a name to ask for when they get there. Not nearly as intimidating if you know why you're coming and who you have to ask for than just bowling up and not knowing what to say. We have our social enterprises group where we have the op shops, we do Trade Me sales, we actually run a catering business, so we do catering for corporates, we've done weddings, funerals, morning teas, afternoon teas, any sort of celebration we will do catering. We've also got our City Mission Cafe, a very successful community cafe in Hereford Street. That provides a good community space for people from all walks of life. It's a vibrant space, it's value for money, and it's a great meeting space. It's value for money, it's $2 for a tea, $3 for a coffee, $2 for a scone, $3 for a muffin. There's other things that are more expensive than that. But we are catering for those people who want to be able to go out, who want to experience those nice things to do but can't afford to do it on a regular basis. And you can go there any day of the week and you can see business people down one end having a meeting. You can see tradies coming in for a coffee. You can see our staff going backwards and forwards all day buying coffees at $3 a pop. You can see people from the community coming in. You can see a grandmother, a mother and a grandchild coming in, and they might come every week as a catch-up because for about $10 or $12 they can have quite a nice period of socialisation. So that's been a really great introduction. We started that in October last year. We provide housing. We've got emergency housing for men and women. They arrive at 5 o'clock at night, and if there's a bed, we'll give them a bed, we'll give them a meal. They can sleep the night. For $2, they can do their washing and dry their clothes. They can have toast and coffee for breakfast. We send them on their way at 8 o'clock. 9 o'clock, they can come back for our day programs. And so every day, Monday to Friday, from 9 until 4, we have day programs for both men and women. And they do learning and development sessions. They do craft, they do singing, they play games, they go on outings, karaoke, and other group sessions. And these programs are times and spaces where they feel welcomed, they feel supported, and it is their family. Some of them have nowhere else to go. This is what they call home. And one of the speakers in that panel said about giving them experiences. We find that people have never been to the beach, which you find really hard to believe, but they live in Christchurch, they've never been to the beach, never been to the movies. And I can understand why they might not have been to the CSO, but we got some tickets to the CSO the other day. They were so excited to go. It was something they hadn't done before. They felt really privileged to be there, and we were really happy that we'd been given these tickets by the CSO because they have been coming to us on a regular basis, playing music to the clients, showing them the different instruments. And then we use it as a learning experience. So they will play different types of music, and they have to write down how what that makes them feel. And it's amazing. You think these people wrongly, think these people don't have skills. They have great skills. They've written wonderful pieces of poetry, wonderful expression on how they're feeling. And when they write those things down, you learn more about them than you do in talking to them on one-on-one, because there's a little glimpse in there and you think, I need to drill down on that. There's something there they're trying to tell us because it's reflected in their writing. One other thing, just as an aside, you know, you're thinking people haven't had the experiences. In our new self-serve food bank, we provide a calculator. There are people who have never used a calculator. Now you think, where have these people been when school has required them to do maths and use calculators? These are the people we're dealing with. They've got such little to build on, and we're trying to give them that base level infrastructure so they can build. And they have got great potential. We've got 5 social workers. We run the only on-call social work staff in Christchurch, where a person can be seen by somebody on the day they come. Now, we may not be able to spend more than a very short space of time. We can interview them. We can determine how great their need is, because we don't want to send somebody away who is absolutely desperate. We will give them further. If it's not as desperate, we will say, come back tomorrow and you can come and see so-and-so. And so we'll give them a time to come. But we won't turn anybody away who comes on the day. We have an outworker who goes out on the street every morning at 7:30. He goes out to meet the people living on the street. These people don't want to come to us. And you might say, why do they not want to come to us? Well, their lives are very complex. Something has happened in their life. They have a distrust for the government. They have a distrust for organisations. They have a distrust for people. They just don't want to come to us. They also sometimes can't come to us because they don't have an identity. They live on the street because they don't have an identity. If you haven't got an identity, you can't get a bank account. If you haven't got a bank account, you can't get a benefit. And so we are working with these people. And Josh would say, if I can get them to even look me in the eye or they whisper a word to me, I feel like I've got an entree to help them. So he goes out every morning. He's living on the street. If you've got a sleeping bag, it often gets quite wet. If it's been raining overnight, he'll say, do you need a sleeping bag? Do you need some warm clothes? Do you need medical attention? Have you got food? We are trying to get them to have confidence in what we're doing and confidence enough to come to the mission so that we can work with them in a broader way. And he is, he has lived on the street. He knows what it's like. He's had lived experience. He's been 10 years. He's been off drugs and alcohol, and he's now working for us. You have to be off drugs for 2 years before you can work for us, because the temptation is there all the time with clients coming in. He's got a relationship with a person who actually also works for the mission. They've got a 6-year-old. I mean, he's really turned his life around. I went to a meeting with the council and the chamber this week, and they said to him, what was it that turned your life around? He said, my family gave me one more chance to come home. But the problem is, these people on the street don't have families who are prepared to do that. They've probably never had what we would call a family. So we're working with the most vulnerable people. But he's doing a great job, and he has brought some people to the mission. He's challenged by it. He loves it. He absolutely lives and breathes it. We'd like to be able to replicate him, because he only works Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. We'd love to have somebody doing the evenings and doing the weekends, because that's some of the time when these people need support, need somebody looking, talking to them. So we've got all of those activities, and I'm sure I haven't actually told you all of the things that we do. But there can be up to sort of 16 touch points in the mission. So if a person comes to us, our people are skilled enough to know exactly what goes on in the mission and can say, well, I think you might need to talk to the mental health nurse, who says, would you like to talk to a social worker, who says, I think you've got an alcohol problem, who said, I think you need to talk to the financial mentors. So we've got all of those different things happening within our organisation, and hopefully we can give them these total wraparound services rather than just what they might come for. Because what they come for is probably not what they really need, it's just their first touch point. It's very busy, it's very broad. Our clients are actually very complex and their needs are many. You can see one of our clients today and you can have quite a decent conversation. They come in tomorrow, they've been on drugs overnight. You have no way of getting through to them. And you have to say, you have to come back when we can actually deal with you in a better way. Then they get stroppy, they get angry, they do stupid things when they leave. There's two things that I worry about most in my role. One is the safety and security of the clients and the staff, because these people are unpredictable. We would get an incident report on our health and safety system probably 2 to 3 times a week. Mostly not major, but if our people didn't have ways of de-escalating issues, they could well become major, but our staff are all trained in how to de-escalate issues. So I sort of think, are we making a difference? And like, maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow. It's a long term, like the marathon, not the sprint. One person said to me, small miracles happen at the mission every day. So if it happens every day, then we're doing 365 small miracles a year. That's all I can focus on, because on a daily basis, it's very hard to see the difference that you're making. But we sometimes get testimonies from people who've been through our services. So a couple of testimonies that I've got here. I'm white, I'm middle class, I'm educated, I'm a professional woman. Not the normal expectation of who would attend the city mission, but there's many of us in society who are in the same situation that I was in before finding the mission. I'm one of the lucky ones who was driven to the mission by one of my children who journeyed down every avenue they could for me and finally ended up at the golden door of the mission. And this is the person who came to our AOG services. She came out okay. Then when I was admitted, I had lost my daughter, my grandchildren, my sons, my sanity, my worth, my morals, my heart, my soul, my smiles. I'd lost myself. Then I went to the mission. The first step was so scary. I had to admit how much substance I was taking, but was too shy to admit my addiction. 15 bags of synthetics a day. I was immediately welcomed, started my healing. I was scared and angry and shy and withdrawn. But I thank my children for making me take the first step to become free from 42 years of addiction. So when you get stories like that, or like a funeral that we had of one of our workers who just left and then unfortunately died quite soon, clients came to that and had the courage to stand up at the funeral and say things like, if it wasn't for Judy, I wouldn't be here today. So that is what makes you want to keep doing this job. So we are very blessed as an organisation. We've been around a long time. We've been around for 95 years. We've had some good staff over the years. We've had some good missioners. We've done a lot over that time. We're blessed with some really good buildings now. We've got many paid employees and many willing and committed volunteers. We've got about 90 full-time equivalent employees and 170 volunteers who help us. And the cost is immense. In 1929, the cost was £750 a year, if only. Well, it's now $12 million a year. And that doesn't include the money, the food that gets donated or the volunteer time that gets given to us. So it's a massive, burden, that's the wrong word, challenge to us to get that money in. $12 million is $33,000 every day of the year, 365 days of the year that we have to find. And 40% of it comes from government contracts, 40% from individual donors, and 20% from trusts and foundations. So we're working, fundraising. It sometimes feels like all we're doing is fundraising, and you feel like if only I could really concentrate on the work rather than the fundraising. But we need those people to support us to do what we're doing. And unfortunately, the demand for our services grows every day. We'd love it to be diminishing. We'd love to do ourselves out of a job. But realistically, every year since it started, I'm sure the mission has grown. We're not intending to grow. What we're doing is responding to the needs of the community. So I thought I'd just show you one or two slides before I finish. You don't have to listen to me for too much longer. You won't be able to read that, but that's the org chart, and you'll see that we are divided into those services that I've talked about, the social enterprises, which is the Trade Me, the op shops. Creating community atmosphere, but somewhat trying to earn some money for the mission. Social services, which is the accommodation, the financial mentors, the client education, and the food bank, both the traditional food bank and the self-serve food bank. Social impact manager does the community development out in the community, the social workers, and the community connectors. So we have community connectors, so if somebody comes in and they don't know how to go to WINS, they don't know how to go and apply for things, they need to go to the bank, but they don't know how to talk to the bank, we will go with them, we will take them. We will make sure that they get everything they're entitled to, because some of those departments don't offer it up. So we go and make sure they get what they need. We've got fundraising and marketing team, which also does our comms. And then alcohol and other drug, which is quite big. Thorpe House is the detox unit. Wahine Waiora is a women's support session that happens on Monday to Friday, 9 to 3, with women when their children are at school. And if they're not working, then they're likely to relapse because they've got nothing to keep themselves occupied. But they can come to us, they can come every day, they can come one day a week, they can come for a week and not come for 3 months. We are there every time they feel like they're going to slip back, they can come to us and be there for the day. Elmtree Lodge is the transitional accommodation for the people who've been through the detox unit. We do home detox, we've got our counsellors and we've got our mental health nurse. And then we've got standard sort of HR department that looks after the employees and looks after the volunteers. One thing that I didn't tell you under social services, under accommodation, we now have what's called transitional housing for general people, not the people coming out of detox. And it's three floors of five bedrooms each, and they sign up for 90 days. So they make a commitment to do what we ask them to do for 90 days. So every morning they have to do learning and development, come to our programs. We do numeracy, literacy, computer skills, CV writing. If they want to get a driver's license, we'll help them do that. We're giving them skills so that they can go back into the community. And they stay there for the 90 days, and then we find them accommodation in the community. And we're finding that it's easier to find accommodation for these people when they've been through our program, because landlords know that they're suitable to come out into the community. And also our navigators who are with them while they're in there for the 90 days actually still keep in touch with them when they're out in the community. And so we follow up with them. We make sure that they're still doing okay. Right, moving on. A bit about the impact. So we did 17,000 food parcels last year, which was $2,900 worth of food, up 17% on the last year and 23% cost increase. You probably won't see that those stats go up this year because we're not getting as much food donated, so we're having to restrict the number of food parcels that we can give out. But we had 72,000 interactions with 10,000 clients. That's a lot of people coming. Some people only come once or twice. Some people come a lot more often than that. We are their family. We don't turn them away. It's actually quite hard for me to get these stats too. I spend most of my time nagging the staff about, please, please, please write the stats down. But our client management system is not quite as good as it should be, so we're looking to get a better system so that we can actually talk about what we're doing. So there's the buildings over the road from our main building, the cafe in the bottom left-hand corner, the transitional housing behind, and then the new self-serve food bank warehouse and office space in front. So that's the transitional housing. That's just an aerial view. You can see the size of the new building that we've just built. That's inside the transitional housing. So they get a bedroom each. They get communal areas. We encourage them to be in the communal areas as much as they can because it's all about living in community. But as you all know, quite nice to crawl back to your own room every now and then if you want some space, because we're bringing five individual people who've never met each other before. It is quite challenging, but they are supposed to spend the bulk of their time here. We've got wood panelling on the walls to make sure that we don't have to renovate too often, but they are quite respectful because they're in nice surroundings and they're very privileged to be there and they know that. So that's what the kitchen, dining, living looks like. And that's looking down to that living area, and off to the side are the bedrooms, and off this side are the showers and the toilets and the laundry. And the bedrooms are double glazed and warm and sunny and really nice to be in. In fact, there's a bedroom there before we'd actually made the bed. You get a bed, a bedside cabinet, a chair with a footstool, a TV and a wardrobe. Pretty nice surroundings. There's the cafe. Well, it looks like any other cafe, but we're very proud of our cafe. It's vibrant, it's exciting, the food's nice. People say, somebody told me the other day, the scones were the best they'd ever tasted. I hope that was true. somebody said, oh, for $2, is it $3 for a coffee. Is that instant? No, it's barista coffee. So there's the all-day breakfast. So that's Josh's car. That's out on the street, going to see people where they are out on the street. That's in the women's accommodation and day program. So for Matariki, not this year, but last year, we did a lot of learning and development about what that was and gave them lots of education. We had speakers in, and then they decided to decorate their room, and then we put on a meal for them that night, and then we also put a meal on for the men the next night. So just to celebrate the new year, because we do have all ethnicities, and probably 50% of our clients would be Maori and Pacifica ethnicity, but then we have lots of other ethnicities as well. There's a moved op shop. I said new, but we did have one in Truam Street. It's in Barbita Street. It's nice, it's bright, it's light, it's clean. It's a great place to be. And if you've ever got anything that you want to drop off, it's do so. If you've got houseful or you've got furniture that you can't bring in, we will come out and pick it up. We won't turn anything away. We've been even asked to take whole house loads, and we will do that, because my words are, we can only sell what we get, and if we haven't got stuff there, we can't sell. And sometimes we do get a little bit short on stock, and it really shows in the revenue for that week, because if you haven't got anything to sell. And people come in, some people come in, and we know that some of them are dealers. They come in once or twice a day to see what's there. And so we want to make sure that they keep wanting to come, because we need to have things for them to buy. And in that shop there, we were doing about $6,000 or $7,000 a week in Truam Street. We did $10,000 a week once we moved to this shop. But $10,000 a week, when the clothing's about $4 and things are 50 cents and $1 and $1.50, and furniture's probably only maybe $100 or $150, depending on what it is we're selling, you have to sell a lot of stuff to make $10,000 a week. So it's a real challenge for us as well. We get plants like that from nurseries. We send them out to the prison, and they will develop the plants, and then they'll send them back, and we will use them in food parcels or in our accommodation for food, or perhaps even in our cafe. So once upon a time, this is somebody picking up a food parcel. Once upon a time, we had single males, pretty much. Now it's families with an income, and families even with two incomes. Periods of time in their life, something doesn't go well for them and they need short-term help. They might only come the once. That's fine. We'll help them. That's getting ready for Christmas. So downstairs underneath our building, there's a basement car park. Those are two deep, floor to ceiling high, right round the whole of that. We do 1,800 food parcels in Christmas week, and we have to store those boxes all year. Plus, we're using 300 and something of those boxes every single day of the year as well. So that's the Thursday team. They tell me they're the A team, but every volunteer group during the week tell me they're the A team, which is good, because from my perspective, they are all the A team. And this is when they had the food bank. They grew out of the food bank upstairs. They moved down into the basement, so we had to give up our car parks. Now they're across the road. So this was underneath. It was pretty chaotic trying to deal with the volume of food parcels we were dealing with. So there's the new building, there's the new warehouse before we put in all of this racking. So now it looks like any other supermarket, I'm not supposed to call it a supermarket, but any other supermarket warehouse. In fact, we went to Durham Street New World the other day. We have a bigger warehouse than they have, but they order 7 days a week, and they order what they sold yesterday and put it straight on the shelves. But we might get given 5 pallets of nappies and 5 pallets of toilet paper, and that takes up you know, two whole bays. And that might take 3 or 4 months to use perhaps, but we don't turn things down. So we need a lot more storage space than a standard supermarket. So there they are. These are the volunteers in the new place, which has got, they can see the light of day now and it's warm. And they feel part of everything because when they were downstairs in the car park, they never really saw anything else that was going on. So that's the self-serve food bank as it's getting ready, and there we are. Just looks like any other supermarket that you might go into. All the standard things. And they get points to spend in the self-serve food bank. So if you're a single adult, you get 55 points, and if you're a large family, you get 75 points, and everything on the shelves, no dollars, it's points. So you'll see in, oh, you can't see in this. You'll see in this one, this person is shopping. There's the pink calculator that we give them. It's pink, I think, because no one wants to steal a pink calculator. The top line there, they're 2 points each. One's below a 1 point. And then the next one down, which you can't really see very well, it must be a 2 point because it's got a greeny band, but it's got a one in the middle. So we limit people. So that'll be two. So cooking oil is 2 points, but you can only have one. Same with chocolate biscuits. I think they're 3 points, but you can only have one because we're trying to tell them to buy healthy food and we don't want them filling up their trolley with things that perhaps aren't nutritious. Meat is very hard to come by. So meat is 4 points, limit one, and limit any one, not one of everything that we've got in there. But then we give things for nothing, like bread is 0 points, because we get bread mainly when it's a day old, and so it's not going to last forever. We would sooner people use it than throw it out. Bread is 0 points. At the moment, oat milk down there, that's 0 points, because we've been given a lot that's got an expiry of September, so we would sooner give it out than have it thrown out. So that's 0 points. You'll see things like beanies or perhaps some little blankets or something that we might not send down to the op shop. We'd put in here. They're 0 points because we don't want people using their food points on things that are other than food. And that's the waiting area in the new building. It's lovely. It's sunny, it's bright, it's clean, it's really nice. This is the choir. So what we've got a tutor who comes from the university who teaches singing. Actually teaches singing about how you warm up, and they really, really enjoy it. These are clients and staff and volunteers. So on the celebration of the mosque shootings this year, there was some competition for singing or creating a song or something. Anyway, they had one of their clients write this song and they sung it and they got first prize. They were so excited because some of them have never achieved anything in their life before. Here they are. And they feel like they're also giving back. So we put on a morning tea for them and then they sang for us, which they really enjoyed. And we started the choir last year because we do a carol service at the end of the year. And our learning and development person said, we'll have a choir. And we all went, oh, crikey, how's this going to work? Well, they loved it. They really enjoyed it. Three of them sang a solo, but they'd never been in a church before. Two did a reading. To get the confidence to go up there and do that, they're so excited. They got their red T-shirts. They made their own badges. They really felt proud that they could give something back. And that one is Christmas week, just to show you what it's like. It's pretty full on. We shut half the road. They have vouchers. We have three lines of them coming in and going out, and we do 1,800 of those. Very blessed. We had 1,800 chickens donated by one organisation, 1,800 hams. We had to buy our pavlovas, and then we had all the other things that people give us at Christmas that we could build up some Christmas packaging. I think it's probably time I stopped. So at the end of this reflection, I just think that I would like to ask you to pray for the clients. The clients are the most vulnerable people in our city. We want them to have hope. We want them to have purpose in life. And we want them to allow us to work with them because that is the first challenge. They have to want to come and let us help. Pray for the staff that they have the strength and capacity to love and support these people. It's pretty draining. They get quite tired because you're meeting different clients all day, every day. And they are trained to do that, but it is quite challenging. Pray for our volunteers, that they know that without them we couldn't do what we're doing. It would cost us another $600,000 a year if we had to pay for those volunteers, perhaps another 8 or 9 people on the payroll. Pray for the funds that we can cover our costs, and just pray that the Holy Spirit will guide all those involved and associated with the mission, with their desire to help these people and give a hope-filled outcome for all those people who come to us for care and support. Thank you. I don't know if anybody wants to ask any questions. If that's appropriate, I'm happy to answer any questions if you've got any questions. Yes? Yes. We do get, that's probably the part of the organisation that gets the most funding. Like Thorpe House, the detox unit, we will get 6 beds funded and we pay for 4. They fund some of the counsellors. So yes, we do get some, but it's pretty tricky. We don't get enough from them to fund what we want to do. And then we also have to make sure that our salaries are competitive with the salaries that they can pay. And there is a discrepancy there. The social workers have just had a 27% increase. Not of all of our social workers are funded by Te Whatu Ora. If they are, then we'll get the increase. But if we're paying for them, we have to put ours up by that to be competitive. Otherwise, they'll just go and work for somebody who is funded and then they'll get paid. So we're talking to the government all the time to get funding. We get no funding for social workers. We get no funding from the government for emergency accommodation in the day programs. We get a little bit of funding for food, but mainly as a leftover from COVID and the SIQ, and we've had a little bit of funding for them from food. Yep. Yes? The City Council pays for part of Josh's salary on the street. We're talking to them about trying to see if we could get some more funding for a second person. The council did give us some money for the new building. Those 3 buildings that we've just built cost $12 million. We got some money from the council for that, got money from RATA, we got money from the Lotteries Commission, and we got money from Proceeds of Crime, which is a government funding where they get money from selling off things that have been done by people who've committed crimes, and then they give that out to organisations. So we were given quite a bit of money from them as well. Yep. Okay.